This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Rob Mullen, the CEO of Wine in Rome. How are you, Rob?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks, mate. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. We were talking to you last week about some of the alternative formats that you guys produce. Bag and box, which you said was your big product. The PET bottles, which you said was a niche gifting product, and your strangely priced cans. where the more you buy, the more you pay per unit. Which, you know, is...
Probably they're worth it.
This week, I want to actually just explore... We're going to touch on one of the last formats that you're about to introduce, which is cardboard bottles. But I really want to drive into things like carbon footprint and sort of look at the USP from that point of view. And also, you're using a lot of plastic, well, apart from the aluminium cans, obviously, but you're using a lot of plastic in your product. So, you know, if David Attenborough was here, he'd be like having a hernia. But at the same time, it's not necessarily a bad environmental thing what you're doing. So before we jump into all that sort of stuff, just... can we just touch on briefly the new format that you haven't released yet, the cardboard bottle?
Yeah, sure. So the cardboard bottle, essentially, it's a bag in box in the shape of a bottle. It has a cardboard outer lining. The inner lining is a thin layer of plastic, and then has a very conventional screw top. And for us, like the bag in box, it's 90% of our revenue as a business. But that, you know, 24 quid is a lot of money to pay for wine you've never tasted before. And so one of the things that we struggle with is adoption. People wanting to make that leap. You know, firstly, they never bought wine in an alternative format before, and then they've got to pay more money for it because they're obviously getting more wine, but it's a higher price. And, you know, when a consumer sees that price, it's undoubtedly an obstacle to the adoption of our products. The paper bottle... the cardboard bottle we see is the real great solution to that because it brings the price point down to undoubtedly the currency of the wine industry is the cost of a 750ml bottle. So to have a format at that in that size means that we can compete at, you know, at the same price point, but retain most of the environmental advantages of bag in box.
The way you described it is you said it was a cardboard box and you said an air gap. Did you say an air gap or?
No, it's the exact same solution as the bag in box, and in the sense of the technology within it, there's just a plastic liner that, you know, is
does the job.
Yeah, it does the job basically. Yeah.
Otherwise, you get a very soggy bottle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the beauty of these packaging solutions is, you know, because we took investment this year as a business, right? And one of the we were challenged on was like what you're using commercially available solutions that anyone can use, right? And you're like, well, yes, you're absolutely right. Like we're competing as a brand on the quality of our wines, right? The formats we're buying them as commercially available because we cannot, you know, Smurfit Kappa, Frugal Pack, the creator of the bottle. I mean, these are big corporations with big financial resources for research and development, and effectively the innovation is done by them, right? We're just working with them and taking advantage of their advances in technology, right? The paper bottle, these solutions are advancing all the time. Actually, the paper bottle has got to a point where we feel that it's worth, you know, it's ready for a commercial launch. It's a solution that is probably not yet available on a large enough scale to be attractive to the much larger wine brands, right? But we're sort of like we're a medium sized company, and so for us it's a perfect solution.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about CO2 footprints, because last week you touched on CO2 footprints, but I sort of went, oh, no, we'll talk about it next week. So let's talk about it this week.
Next week, Chris, let's talk about it. Yeah. And I said to you last week, actually, you know, when we started this company, for us, the old formats, bag-in-box in particular, was about convenience for the consumer and allowing them to kind of drink in moderation like Italians do, like hence when in Rome. We didn't really consider the carbon footprint in the beginning. And it was only with working with the Scandi monopolies that we realized that there's a huge CO2 advantage to these containers. Their life cycle analysis shows that if we're speaking about the container alone, CO2 footprint of a bag in box is 10 times less than a single-use glass bottle, right?
Yeah.
And for us, you know, we look at the principal problem in the environment, in our opinion, is that there's too much carbon in the atmosphere. So what we want to do, 39% of the wine industry's emissions globally, CO2 emissions globally, are caused by single-use glass bottles. So what we want to do is help to reduce our industry's footprint by using containers that have a lighter CO2 footprint.
Where did you get your 39%? Because I agree it's quite high. Most of the stuff when I've gone through winery CO2 profiles, they normally put it around a third for packaging and shipping, a third for the winery, a third for production because of spraying, and a third for packaging and shipping.
So that is if you consider, I mean, it was from Jancis Robinson, I think, the stat. It's the production and shipping and recycling of single-use glass bottles, right? Because, and I constantly want to use the term single-use glass bottle. We use that everywhere in our literature where we can because...
Yeah, I noticed that.
You know, if you buy a glass bottle and you refill it, then that's great. And it's acceptable because you've made that solution, you know, that container's been manufactured. Like we drink wine out of glasses, and that's cool too because you keep them in your house for years, so that's kind of okay. But the problem is with glass is that although it's infinitely recyclable, it's very heavy, the melting point is very high, so it's very energy intensive to recycle it. And of course, in the UK, like we have some of Europe's lowest recycling rates, right? So something like only 60% of wine bottles in the UK are actually recycled. The rest is going to landfill.
I would have thought it'd be much lower than that because the problem you've got with wine bottles is it can only be recycled into wine bottles. That color we use, that green color, it can't be recolored into another color. So if you've got wine bottles, it is only going to be recycled into wine bottles. Yeah. And in the UK, we don't have any demand for, you know, God bless the UK wine industry, but it's still a small, small fraction of the total wine we consume.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even with big plants like in Bristol, who are using a lot of glass to do bottling, you know, they bring in the wine. What is it? Accolade in Bristol has got a huge bottling facility, and they're bottling a lot of wine that comes into the country, which I'm all for because it gives a use for that glass. Yeah. We're still... You know, a lot of that glass gets land up being ground up and used as aggregate and roads and all sorts of stuff. It's reused, but not necessarily recycled.
Well, okay, that's a very good point, actually. So, yeah, I mean, my statistic is the bottles that go into the waste stream for reuse and recycling, rather than just go straight into the landfill to bury it, right? Because I can tell you from having ran an Airbnb for a while, you know, the majority of guests like it's confused. The rules are confusing in the UK. Every region has a different set of recycling rules, and as a consequence, people just kind of chuck everything in the landfill bin, you know. And so that's an issue.
All right. So whatever the exact amount of carbon CO2 for a bottle, whether it's I think it's probably more a third. You think it's nearly 40%, but it's still a significant chunk, isn't it? And one of the things I want people to realize is that when you pick up a bottle, if it's a heavy bottle, it doesn't mean it's a premium wine. It just means that the people who made that wine don't care about the environment. Lightweight bottling is the easiest way of reducing that carbon footprint because you're just using less stuff. You've got less glass. You say it's used a lot of energy to make, and it's also the transportation because one of the things about bag and boxes, it fits squarely. There's very little volume wastage in space, whereas a bottle, about half the space is wasted in because of the shape of the bottle.
Yeah,
I'm doing your job for you, mate.
You're better than me. Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying your bag and box solution uses about 10% of the carbon.
Yeah.
Okay, but you do produce a lot of plastic waste, though, don't you?
100%. Like so in the spirit of transparency that we want to display to the consumer. Yeah. So the bag and box solution is a cardboard box with a plastic liner inside that preserves the wine right in perfect order. And the bag itself is recyclable. The tap is not, okay? But the tap is attached to the bag. So undoubtedly, if that tap is not separated from the bag, a lot of those will go into landfill, not be recycled. And it's plastic, and some people find just the simple idea of plastic distasteful, right? Now, the thing is with plastic is, as you say, there's a huge trade-off, really, between emissions and plastic, not just in the wine industry, but across the food and drink industry, right? Like, if you think about meat, you know, meat is has a horrible carbon footprint, and we know this because we, you know, we measure the carbon footprint of our product from vineyard to shelf, and we benchmark it against all sorts of things, right? And so, you know, if you import wine from Sicily in a box, it's way better for the environment than drinking dead, you know, milk from a cow, that even if the cow was in three fields away from you, right? So in the UK, so there's, yeah, you know, the meat and dairy is that has a horrible, horrible CO2 footprint. You put a piece of meat that's not shrink wrapped in plastic, it then, you know, it has to be thrown away. Then that's its own goal, because it would have been much better to shrink wrap it in plastic to preserve the life of that product so that it can be sold and consumed, and then the plastic is thrown away and recycled. You know, we work with a company called Enval that it looks to, you know, speed up recycling, you know, the adoption of new recycling solutions in the UK. And the guy, Carlos, who runs it, says, like, it's not as if, you know, plastic doesn't grab Speedos and sun cream and go to the beach by itself, right? Plastic that ends up in the ocean is because it's not been disposed of properly. It's not gone into the waste stream. Plastic's very recyclable at a low melting point. As you say, it's not necessarily recycled into food-grade plastic again. It might turn up in something else as part of a cycle path, but it can be recycled very easily. The CO2 advantage is so great over glass that, you know, in our opinion, it's worth using plastic to package that wine, because that's our fundamental problem, is we need to reduce the carbon footprint of our industry.
Okay. So you said that your bag and box is quite, you know, it's 10 times less CO2 for the packaging. What about aluminium cans? Because you use aluminium cans, and aluminium has a higher melting point than plastic, that's for sure. I'm an electrical engineer. I used to work supplying electricity to an aluminium smelter. We used to supply huge amounts of energy to the smelter.
Now I know why you're having such a great time in the wine industry, Chris, if you used to work for the, you know, energy.
Yeah. You can't drink molten aluminium, I can assure you.
So actually, we kind of rank our products, and if we're talking again about the packaging alone, and I'll come to the footprint of the whole product later, but like the, you know, a bag in box is about 10 times less CO2 than a single-use glass bottle. The paper bottle is about 6 times less, and the aluminium can is about 4 times less, right? So again, you could challenge us and say, well, why have you launched a format that is less environmentally friendly than the bag in box? And the answer is because at a lower price point, people are more likely to discover our products, and there's still that environmental. There's an environmental advantage to almost every alternative format container in the wine industry compared to a single-use glass bottle. It's for the majority of wine drunk, if you're not going to put it in your cellar, if it's not sparkling, it's senseless to buy these things. You know, we're mystified at how slowly they're being adopted in the UK, really, because we're so far behind. If you think bag-in-box is about between 3 and 5% of the UK market, in France it's 42%, right? And the French know a lot about wine. And they, you know, they, so if you go to any.
Well, you say that. I know a lot of French who know nothing about wine. There's a lot of very high end, very passionate people about wine. There's a lot of people that just drink it. Okay. So one of the things about bag and box and is that a lot of the wines that land in it are pretty average wines. And,
yeah,
I don't want to say anything negative about your wines, but you've gone for, you know, IGP wines or low level DOC wines, etc. So they're not premium wines. And you mentioned the Findish market last week, and they have premium wines in bag and box. So why did you not try and introduce more premium wines into the mix? You know, a little bit of Chianti or something like that.
So the answer is for some of the real premium denominations like Chianti, they will not let you call it Chianti if you put it in a box. Like Italy.
Oh, that's right. They won't even let you do it with a screw cap, will they? Or they never used to.
The Italian market is complex. Even before you start talking about old formats, we had a very particular argument actually about Montepulciano, because we sell Inocardo Montepulciano, and it's a DOC. It's a beautiful wine we sell. It's a lovely Montepulciano, and it has like the DOC seal, what they call la fascetta in Italiano, that goes round the bottleneck. It goes over the little cap where there's a little circular thing that you push to open the box, right? So we sell that in the UK market with that fascetta, with the blessing of the DOC people. Then we proposed to them the paper bottle for the same product, because we wanted the same product in the same format on Ocado. And they said, no way, it's a bottle. And they said, no, it's a bag in box. And we're like, well, it looks like a bottle to me. And they said, no, it's a bag in box. And whilst we're happy for you to have the wine in a 2.25 liter bag in box and a glass bottle, we're not happy with a bag in box that's the size of a bottle. You can't do that. And we're like, why not? Well, because you can't. So we get into these difficulties all the time, actually, with denomination. We have to choose wines that are where it's allowed. So Nero d'Avola is also DOC, and that is allowed to be filled in a bag in box. Anything that's DOCG, no way.
Yeah.
They won't allow you to do it.
Yeah, they're a bit funny out there about that. I suppose that's the problem with being a Rome-based or an Italian-based wine supplier. How do you ship your wines? Because one of the issues that you get with Italian wines anyway is it's less carbon intensive to bring a wine in from, say, New Zealand or Australia by boat than to bring a wine in from Italy by truck. You know, it's the CO2 you lose by trucking it up from Italy is huge. So how do you deal with that?
We've started to put the precise carbon footprints of our wines on the labeling, right? So we're working with a Swedish company called Carbon Cloud to do that. They started work with Oatly, the oat milk company. Mm-hmm. There's one of the first companies to do that in the UK market, to publish the carbon footprint of their products. There's very few people that do it, actually. And we started working with those guys. They have a modeling system where we submit every element of our supply chain and what we use and the kind of fuel that goes in the trucks to come to a carbon footprint. Now, our supply chain, actually, we bring our wines from Verona to the UK by train. So it comes through the Channel Tunnel. So, and we've been doing that for years, and it's obviously a lot better for the environment. There's a lot lower CO2 footprint in doing that. It's also been handy for us because there's now a shortage of HGV drivers, and we haven't really been affected by that on our international supply chain because we're using the train. The trains are now fuller than ever. So actually that HGV crisis has started to have an impact on, it's greened the supply chain within Europe, actually, because people are shipping more by train. Mm. So that's a kind of unforeseen consequence of Brexit, I guess. But the fact is, you know, you're right, actually, like shipping by sea is very green. Shipping by train is also green. Where we struggle is, so for example, when we put the footprint of our wines on the box, a Sauvignon from Friuli, which is fairly near to Verona, it's like 690 grams of CO2 per kilo of product. Mm-hmm. Because it comes, most of the shipping is done by train. However, a Nero d'Avola from Sicily is 890 grams of CO2 per kilo of product. Because, as you correctly state, it has to come by truck from Sicily to the north of Italy, because domestic rail freight just doesn't really work. Like the market isn't, it's the same in the UK. It's very hard to ship things domestically by train. The market's just not, there's not the flexibility for it. You can't, there's not the facilities to load. And so the whole market isn't set up for sort of small domestic shipments, whereas international rail freight within Europe works quite well. So that's the way we try to reduce that, you know, and we state the difference. You know, for us, it was a big decision to, like, you know, we're publishing our carbon footprint of each of our products, and this one of our products got a way worse carbon footprint than the other. Like, how do we justify that? And it's because of the domestic freight.
Yeah.
Within Italy.
Yeah. Okay. But you haven't thought about dropping the Nero d'Avola for another Italian that's closer to Verona or anything like that? Because let's face it, there's a lot of wine made in Verona.
That's a very good question, Chris. And this is, in being so transparent, it opens up a world of questions for your business, right? And also a world of opportunity to be challenged by consumers. But we just think that's the right thing to do. And we kind of welcome that dialogue. You're absolutely right. What we're trying to do actually instead is work with our Italian partners to try to find a domestic, you know, solution, either shipping by train from Sicily up to Verona, or if not, you know, we just, and as our volumes grow, we ship by container from Palermo to the UK instead by sea. But, you know, we wouldn't feel that pressure if we weren't publishing our own carbon footprint, right? Like, we'd just be like, well, we're doing the right thing. And in saying, look, this product has a worse carbon footprint than this other product that we produce, it puts pressure on us, on ourselves, to find a solution, right? And obviously consumers, it's not like calories yet. People don't really understand the carbon footprint of wine. I mean, for that 890 grams of CO2 per kilo for that Nero d'Avola on a shelf in the UK, If you go for a pint of UK milk made in the UK, it's about triple that in terms of its carbon footprint. Mozzarella is like 8 kilos per kilo, right? So it's multiple times more. Meat is between 16 and 20. So, but people don't know these values yet.
Yeah.
You know? So we want to educate the consumer in these values. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It opens us up to challenges, and we kind of welcome that, but we doesn't mean we need to act on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How do you ship? Do you bring it in bulk, or do you bottle locally and then bring it in?
Depends on the product. So the cans we fill in the UK, we bulk ship into the UK and fill in the UK because in Italy there aren't really facilities for wine canning yet. It's too new. The box wines are mostly filled in Italy and palletized in Italy. The reason being for exactly the same, back to the same DOC regulations, right? A Nero d'Avola can be put in a box, but it has to be filled in the Nero d'Avola DOC region. Same with the multiple channel. If it's brought into the UK by bulk, filled in the UK, you can call it multiple channel.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I hadn't really fully appreciated some of the issues associated with these rules about bottling on it within the DOC or appellation. Because in France, you've got the same issues. You've got to bottle many of the wines in the region that they came from rather than bulk shipping. And that does create problems and increases the carbon footprint, doesn't it? Because if you're shipping by bottle versus shipping by bladder and bottling locally, or in the UK at least, you're going to save a lot of carbon, I would have thought.
Well, this is what's interesting about, you know, in the light of COP26 and countries adopting prerogatives on themselves to lower their own carbon footprint, yet many of their laws prevent people from doing exactly that.
Yeah.
So, you know, over time, this is why they need these targets, because over time, these kind of, you know, this pressure to reduce the carbon footprint of each country will filter down into low-level legislation like wine.
Yeah.
But for the moment, right, there's a huge conflict between trying to reduce if a DOC regulation is saying you have to put it in a glass bottle and the carbon footprint in a glass bottle is 10 times more than a box, then that is not in harmony with the aims of COP26, right?
I think there's going to have to be a bit of a reckoning. I can see why they want it bottled in the DOC or the appellation, simply because if it's bottled in their region, then the appellation has control of it as soon as it's shifted out. And that was the problem with a lot of these wines when they weren't bottled, is the risk of adulteration or adding something else, you know. And that's why these rules came about.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with that. And we like, you know, we actually, the Italy filling, when it's in a bag in box, like the carbon footprint of filling in the UK in a bag in box compared to filling in Italy is a very small difference. It's probably like 5%. The carbon footprint. So we're like, well, actually, if it's controlled in that region and the manufacturer, you know, basically our producer is under the sort of a legal obligation really to guarantee that quality, right? And we think that it has an advantage in terms of taste as well. So,
what about your IGP wines? They can be bottled anywhere.
Yeah, they can be. And the reason why they're still filled in Italy mostly, it's partly because we want to simplify our supply chain. And, you know, if you start doing different things with different SKUs, you get into a mess.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, we're still a really small business, right? I mean, bag in box, between 3% and 5% of the UK market. We're a medium-sized player in that market, and we're Italian wine only. So we're a niche within a niche, right? It's a very fast-growing niche. I mean, we reckon the old format market in the UK is probably growing 40-50% a year, whereas the wine market itself isn't really growing. So we're in a very nice niche, but it is a niche, and we're still too small. I mean, the likes of the big UK fillers, who have very sound environmental practices, actually, I think Green Cross and Accolade in particular.
Yeah.
But we're too small to work with them still, in most cases.
All right then, Rob, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks a lot.